This is a review ad special brought to you by Udemy.com, the Microsoft Nook partnership. A real interest in education, or is it all about the Android patents? Hi everyone, and welcome to this review ad special with our senior editor Christopher Dawson and myself, talking about big story today: Microsoft buying into Nook with in money $300 million, or that equals 17% of the whole business, which torpedoes Nook to what did I calculate? 1.6, 1.9 billion, so more than Barnes & Noble itself is valued at. It's pretty big. And, of course, that also makes the former enemies, at least in a legal sense, at least partners, if not friends now. So
right. All the troubles are behind them. All is well.
So let's dive a little bit deeper in the story by quoting or telling you, our listeners and viewers, more what some other high-profile journalists say, and, well, of course, one of or two points of what we think and our own opinions. So that all started some 20 hours ago by a then-called thought-provoking article on Forbes, just throwing out some ideas there, whether they are true or not true. But interestingly, later on, the deal or the partnership was announced, and exactly like the Forbes article had previously predicted that. So definitely, Tim Rostrell knew all of the details, was just under embargo, and that's basically how everybody else, Business Insider, and then ZDNet, of course, Mary Jo Foley with her All About Microsoft, then everybody else sort of put the pieces of the puzzle together. And that deal, maybe some initial thoughts from you, Chris?
Yeah, you know, I it's a well, of course, it's this meeting of two enemies. I mean, Barnes & Noble was one of the last to sort of continue fighting against Microsoft as they challenged a number of patents. And so for them to sort of end things in this way seems, it was certainly surprising, I think, for most folks. Maybe not Tim Rostrell, but you know, I think those folks were a little less so. I think those folks were a bit taken aback, though. Definitely seems as though this has been in the works for quite some time. If we kind of look at the history, and we'll kind of make our way through that. But
I think as you said, Barnes and Noble kept fighting, but with the piles of money Microsoft is sitting on, it was, at least to my feeling now, a matter of time until they had to somewhat, I would say, agree to this offer presumably Microsoft made them.
This is a nice settlement for Barnes & Noble. They come out of this, I think, pretty nicely. They get a strong partner in the face of increasing competition, and their stock price went up, what, 85% today after the announcement? So that's a nice boost for them. So at least the Wall Street is happy. The analysts are happy. I think it remains to be seen what effect this will have on education and what potential upsides there could be for Microsoft, because it really is the education business. It sounds as though they're particularly interested in. So,
So of course we are scheduled for a talk with McGraw-Hill on Thursday, and I think we'll have one or two questions for the McGraw-Hill executive about this deal, what they know, probably are not allowed to disclose, but maybe we'll get one or two insights there. And of course, seeing Barnes & Noble, the Nook marketplace as a counterpart, not equally as big as Amazon or, of course, Apple, but having sort of a smaller ecosystem, maybe not the only one in the future, maybe we'll see even more, but maybe popping up something there in that direction, and so therefore of course boosting the tablets, the marketplace, the whole Barnes & Noble or at least Nook experience.
Right, and you know, I think it's important to remember that although Barnes & Noble isn't a player in the same way that, Amazon is, they do have quite a large on-campus presence, so there's they run a whole lot of the bookstores for, I'm not sure what the percentage is, it's a majority, though, of the bookstores in on college campuses in this country, and that certainly has some impact here, I think.
That's a good point, yeah.
Puts Microsoft in a position to have even greater degrees of access to students.
Now, the interesting point is, of course, as with those 17%, 300 million buying into Nook, they get, of course, as so Microsoft gets, of course, as Nook is, of course, built on the Android ecosystem, they get a lot of patents, the same as Mary Jo Foley on ZDNet points out. And at the same time, this would basically, I think, is interesting for Microsoft on the one hand for getting money, license fees, and so on for these patents. On the other hand, we mentioned in the intro of this talk that they had this whole lawsuit about or around the patents, so patent lawsuit, and of course, solving this almost at the same time. So I think there are some at least interesting points here for Microsoft, and I myself not 100% sure what Microsoft was focused on when offering this partnership or sort of lining or making
the play in this space,
yeah. Yeah, for this deal, yeah, outlining this deal, yeah.
Well, you know, the guy who is now sort of heading this up, he was moved out of, you know, last, I guess, December of 2011, was moved out of the Windows 8 role as a leadership, in leadership there, and began
a
heading up an special project. No one knew anything. All of a sudden, now he's the guy. So clearly, this has been on Microsoft's plate for a while. But the question becomes then: do they now have themselves an e-reader, or do they have an Android device? Do they have hardware onto which they can shoot Windows 8? So there have been lots of rumors of a Windows 8-based e-reader, which in and of itself seems a little strange when the rest of the world is sort of converging around these multi-purpose devices that happen to read books. So the overall strategy is not, it's clear there was a strategy. What that strategy was, though, isn't clear.
I agree. So when you read the different tech blogs, everybody focuses a little bit, sometimes on the same point, sometimes on different points. So for example, Digital Trends states that this could even be a quote, power grip, then as Microsoft will get access to the Barnes & Noble Nook Android patents, and so both originally fought over. And I agree with you, following this conference call with the executives that they also live-streamed this noon my time, so morning East Coast. It was, so they definitely mentioned that, of course, the Nook is the e-reader, but they also went on other media consumption, and the third pillar was somewhat the publisher part or site or ecosystem. So So far, the Nook, you're right, saying has always been considered the e-reader, also in different studies. It was never pulled into this family of tablet devices, although it's also a little bit difficult for me to say, okay, what Nook are we talking about, as there are so many different versions. And it is definitely from its specs and the what it can do more than only an e-reader, so why not counting it in the tablet family? That's a little bit weird, but maybe they want to see themselves, like really what direction they are heading into.
I think there was always, kind of this attempt at market differentiation, and mm-hmm. and just as walking into Barnes & Noble was supposed to be an experience that you couldn't achieve buying things on Amazon, so reading your books on the Nook was supposed to be sort of a little more touchy-feely, perhaps. But, what it comes down to is they have an Android tablet, and mm-hmm. along with some other dedicated e-readers that people don't like as much as the Android tablet, because it doesn't do as much. I think it's a... It is interesting when we look at this partnership as well. It's not just the hardware, but now the Nook Store is going to be bundled in with Windows 8. So just as Apple has its own content ecosystem, Android and Google have a content ecosystem that they've built out. Mm-hmm. Well, now all of a sudden Microsoft opens itself up with a content ecosystem, and that may in fact be the bigger story here, which I think a lot of people are glossing over, and which mm-hmm. might actually have more implications in education as well if we start thinking about the other companies that are producing content and building things out in the e-reading space. Maybe it's actually No and Chegg and these other companies that are beginning to dabble or dig deep into content production that should be a little more worried here than mm-hmm. say Google or Apple.
It probably depends, and as we don't have that much information yet, I could imagine Microsoft in both camps here, either going completely for the patents, as they are so important and they want to be more present in the Android ecosystem and potentially being a menace for this whole ecosystem. On the other hand, and then only taking the effects you just pointed out as sort of nice side effects, or they take it a little bit more seriously to really be, I think we see some interesting moves from Microsoft just recently, and with the way or the company strategy to be on in more markets, partnering with more people, maybe different from the past, that only either suing, buying, or closing other companies, instead of now seeing, okay, these are the different horses, and maybe they definitely have enough money, so why not partnering with some of them and then see, you pointed the announced native app for Windows 8 out. If this, if this was accepted well by customers, it could very well be that Microsoft then says, works better than we might have anticipated. So let's invest a little bit of more money, more effort in that, because it seems to be appreciated by the customers, and that's what we want. So.
Well, they're the only major software platform vendor that doesn't have an app store of some sort, mm-hmm. and relying on third parties so far, including Apple and iTunes and Amazon and so on. So it makes sense that they would be positioning themselves in that way, and it certainly was kind of a gaping hole in their upcoming operating system. Windows 8 looks like it's going to be a perfectly nice operating system, competitive in terms of security and features and performance. Everything's great, except there's this whole thing that we're a completely consumerized society now that expects a whole lot out of our devices, whether it's a professional work device that's probably running Windows or something that's much more focused on straight consumer use cases or educational use cases for that matter. Microsoft obviously has quite a large market share, declining slightly, but overall a great market share. But, when we all have our tablets and our Macs and our various, even the Chrome browser itself, Internet Explorer doesn't have an app store, but Chrome does. I think I hesitate to expect that this is more about the Nook than it is about the various licenses that Barnes & Noble has and its ability to. And Barnes & Noble has been doing a great job of, not as well as, say, Amazon, but a pretty good job of building out its own ability to distribute content through the demise of Netflix and some of these other groups that are also distributing. So I think there's a lot going on here. They also have been buying up patents left and right. They spent $1 billion earlier month with AOL for some patents, that some of which look fairly esoteric, some of which are, I didn't think AOL had anything left worth $1 billion. There's obviously...
For some people, like apparently Microsoft... maybe it's pocket money, so it's almost crazy or ridiculous to say that and also to offer this money. But, normally I would assume that intelligent people are working there, and if it's worse for them, I cannot see, let's say, great value in the AOL patents, but maybe this is all motivated by some... still hidden strategies they will soon or shortly reveal to the average
mortal. Right.
Yeah.
Well, haven't heard much from Steve Ballmer lately, and he's been remarkably quiet for a person who is not generally. He's pretty extroverted. So, to not hear much from him would suggest that there are some things happening behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And Windows 8, of course, it's just around the corner. And I think it does need to be pretty good. Apple is becoming increasingly entrenched, and more people are simply just declaring this, really for sure this time, the post-PC era, making all of this just a little bit less relevant. I think we've talked about it before. I can't get myself excited about Windows 8. I wish I could. I was very excited for Windows 7 because Vista was so horrific. So I knew it would be an improvement. I was excited for that. Windows 8, okay, great.
Heard from outside of enterprise that many companies simply want to stay with Windows 7. And we even hear how many, also declining, but how many people or companies still stay with Windows NT.
If it ain't broke, I think that there's, companies have built a lot around Windows 7, which means that Windows 8 needs to be a consumer play. And, that's where we're seeing adoption of Android and of iOS and of Apple products is among the consumers who are then taking it to their businesses and insisting that they be able to use these products at work. This means that the Microsoft has to build out this some compelling reason for consumers to jump into Windows 8, and in fact, if we look at students as sort of the gateway to the enterprise, students today and enterprise workers tomorrow, then one more reason to try and lock people into this ecosystem, such as it is anymore.
Yeah, that sounds stringent to me. And as you mentioned, Apple, there are some numbers out there that actually due to those low-cost tablets like the, of course, Kindle Fire, but here in this quote, Barnes & Noble Nook is pulled into the tablet space, so that this... knocked down Apple's total share from 64% to only 57.6, which is still a big, big chunk of the market, but it's slightly going down, and probably due to the price point, people getting more attracted, maybe as a first tablet or so on, to Kindle Fires, and why not? I remember in your family there is a Nook, and it's pretty well received.
It is. There's a Nook. There's a Kindle Fire. There's a couple iPads. There's, but you know the kids use probably exceptional. It is exceptional. If I were an average consumer and not someone who had various bits of tech sort of dumped on me, it would be either a Nook or two and possibly Kindle Fire. I mean, it's mm-hmm. the others are just, you know, most people can't go out and just drop $500 unless that's going to become their primary PC, which, again, is sort of Microsoft's mm-hmm. issue here. When people can leave a PC behind and have a perfectly satisfactory experience or a great experience, potentially, mm-hmm. on a not PC, then they're in trouble. I mean, their bread and butter is the PC, and you know, the enterprise continues to drive their profits forward. They had their recent earnings call, and it's all about the enterprise at this point. And, you know, we have other companies now who are distinctly not about the enterprise, namely Apple, mm-hmm. and Facebook even. And if you look at some of these other, you know, the platforms, there's no real enterprise play, and yet mm-hmm. they're exploding. So clearly, if Microsoft wants to stay viable, mm-hmm. 10 years from now, then they need to be able to manage this consumer and enterprise dichotomy, and they've so far done an extremely poor job of that. This is quite clearly a step in the right direction if it's mm-hmm. about, you know, getting into the consumer space, but I question, you know, how much, you know, when you hold a Nook, are you going to think, oh, I've got my Microsoft Nook? No, you're gonna think you've got your Nook.
Yeah.
You know, same as you do with you know, when you hold a Kindle Fire, you don't think, oh, this is an interesting Android tablet. No, it's a Kindle Fire. It has its own brand, and mm-hmm. and the Microsoft brand among consumers is, it's what they use at work, and maybe use at home by default because that's what came on their PC at Walmart. You know.
Yeah. So then we are again in this whole. And that's a little bit in the crystal ball, of course. So if we take Microsoft after this period of antitrust, and I mean they survived, it's already a positive thing for them. But so of course, on the one hand, we now have Microsoft making money through the Android patents. Then, as you said, Windows 8 will most likely, and Mary Jo and her insider or person familiar to the matter, I always love this, definitely agree that Windows 8 will most likely be totally consumer and very little to no enterprise. So is, of course, now is that Microsoft's aim going for the licenses, license agreements for the patents, or what does it mean for the Android ecosystem, for Nook in the end as well? So do they want to be somewhat present through another company in this ecosystem and maybe eating it up from the inside?
Yep.
So could be a pretty
it's like a risky
nice
strategy, but no,
risky,
no.
Not nice strategy, but could actually pay off if, of course, all the constellations worked in favor of Microsoft. And
of course.
That's very, very hard to say, as the other people involved are pretty smart as well. What could it be, this Windows 8-based Nook? Was it something Barnes & Noble had to agree on to give this to Microsoft to the least, or at least? Or should we even care about this? Or, as you said, consumers the average customer, well, I'm going to buy a Nook. Is it important for them that the Nook is Android-powered or that there is Microsoft on it? Will they even think about it? I think for the companies it's very important, right, and for their future. But how the customer will most likely not make their decision based on deep thinking about what's the ecosystem. Of course, they will ask, okay, what's the price and what are the apps I get with the Nook?
Yeah. Do I have a Facebook app? Can I play Angry Birds? And, you know, can I read books? That's it. Maybe can I watch movies? And all of which are answered yes by a Nook and yes by a Kindle Fire and yes by an iPad. And then all of a sudden, for the average consumer, it comes down to price. And again, now let's say we actually see this Windows 8 tablet come along. Well, it's going to, if history repeats itself, and probably will, it will be more expensive because there's the Windows 8 licensing now that it's incorporated in the cost. Unless someone can drive down hardware prices enough to keep the status quo, I just continue to feel like this is much more about software and platform and content distribution, which everyone else seems to have mastered pretty well, but Microsoft does not, than it is about the hardware. And in fact, there are some rumors suggesting, we know there will probably be a Windows 8-based Nook, but there's not much evidence to suggest that they're going to kill off the Android-based Nook either. And in fact, that can allow some nice market differentiation. Again, a premium Nook perhaps with Windows 8 installed, and then the low-end Android, junk.
Do you think Google has to worry a little bit that Microsoft is more and more looking into not having control, but having something to say about Android patents?
Absolutely. I think that, look at where they are right now with Sun and Oracle. It looks as though that this suit is largely going to walk away. Stephen J. Von Nichols over at ZDNet calls it dead lawsuit walking. I wrote an article the other day on Googling Google about, that's why they hired Timothy Bray, former Sun guy and really very, very sharp guy, but they're insulating themselves against lawsuit, and I think that this is another case where absolutely they do need to be concerned, because their bread and butter right now is being able to deliver ads on mobile, on their own mobile platform.
Sure, hard to imagine what Google had left if really the search market wouldn't be existent in the way it is still now. They are not making money with Android, and all the other projects are exciting projects and very futuristic, but are not the big money maker. That's still the ad business.
So, right. And, if everyone has a device in their hands, which the vast majority of us do, or a growing majority of us do, then we darn well better be searching on Google and not on Bing. Or not having to, be having Google be paying large licensing fees so that we can be searching with Google. There's search, there's content, there's ad surfacing and presentation. There's a lot here, and even if we just sort of circle this back to education, Microsoft has huge educational implementations, whether it's very aggressive licensing prices for their products, or site licensing, or they have Live at EDU, which is now Office 365 for Education. So they've got all these plays, and in fact, Office 365 for Education has a much larger market share than Google Apps for Education. And yet, all we ever hear about is Google Apps for Education. Microsoft has not been the best.
No, they are even really bad in communicating. They are sometimes not only good products, but also some of the more innovative ideas. But the strategy of communicating these things and products is very just, Microsoft.
It is. It's utterly Microsoft. And, you know, I think that this, perhaps this is the, at least up to the exterior, the softening a bit of Microsoft, the consumerizing of Microsoft. Mm-hmm. But it also means that, you know, they've made these educational plays, and they are a very important player in education. And so now if they can have that presence in bookstores, in these various things, the content production, content distribution, if they can continue to, they've always done a very poor job of, as you said, presenting themselves as innovators, but now if they can be in an innovative field among college students who are supposedly our innovators and our future innovators, then it could be part of a broad sort of cultural shift if it's engineered correctly. I'm not holding my breath that it will be, but there is a lot at stake here for Microsoft. If this is done right, it could actually be a really important move for them into the 21st century.
I agree. And also, well, they seem to have it longer on their plate. If we believe those rumored little statements that Microsoft originally wanted to build the tablet, and Barnes & Noble provides the bookstore, and then Barnes & Noble dropped out of that deal or partnership or agreement, whatever, and then we had the whole courier team, which is, of course, not existing anymore. Coming out, courier team recently came out with two different applications themselves. But, of course, an application is very different from what courier had originally intended to do or supposed to be.
And they have never been able to get the branding of a Windows slate to take off. It's they're tablets, and tablet equals iPad. So and increasingly it equals, you know, say these other devices, but it doesn't yet equal Motorola Zoom. It equals, you know, a Nook or a Fire or most likely an iPad. So there is this sense that they've, just as they struggle with social and they kind of struggle with search, they also struggle with consumer devices. The Xbox has really been their only consumer device that has been this rip-roaring success, and the Xbox itself is 5 years old now.
Yeah.
So it's certainly time, and again, if we look among students, people who will be primary consumers, it sounds like, if they're focusing on education, this is certainly an opportunity. Mm-hmm. But looking at some of these other analyses here, mm-hmm. I found one is interesting. You know, is this possibly a strategy where they now begin partnering instead of killing or buying? They obviously have not purchased Barnes & Noble, which mm-hmm. they probably could have with this current market cap.
I think they could have if they really, but they seem to go away a little bit from this very aggressive villain Microsoft who either wants to buy you or destroy you, into this more, maybe not nicer, can still be nefarious for the whole Android ecosystem, or also for Nook in Barnes & Noble in some way. Depends how Microsoft is going to play its cards. Definitely see this more into partnering, having a foot in that door, in the other one, and spreading, and simply being there and being everywhere.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's something that has so far worked for Google. But they are just sort of everywhere, and they have a presence in a lot of things, and they're used so widely for AdSense and AdWords, and all and search is. Now you don't hear anyone saying you should go Bing something. People go Google it. Microsoft is no longer synonymous with much of anything except like PowerPoint. PowerPoint's a great tool, but we all end up just putting our PowerPoints into SlideShare or AuthorStream or something else where we can make use of it and share it, or put it on YouTube with voice narration. So you know, Microsoft does need to assert itself.
Something new has to come. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So. And very much Google seems to be in this position, even faced with potential antitrust, and just saw that this very high-profile lawyer was hired against Google, and very much in the position Microsoft was some, well, a decade or even now 2 decades ago. And, well, according what, like, little snippets we hear as statements from Eric Schmidt and also some articles, he definitely seems to see Microsoft as an example. Google as a company was able, and maybe even today can still learn from, and how to behave. As if we see in this period when Schmidt was leaving Sun, and before starting at Google in 2001, he had this 4 years at Novell, and I'm not sure how many people will still remember the company, including me, until I read this piece. And but basically, saying so, Novell and Microsoft was of course eating into Novell's business and share time. And in the end, I think
ate it.
Yeah. And so he had, according to this other Forbes article, he had a speech in front of some of the executives and sales team at Novell, and everybody was basically celebrating that Microsoft had this trouble with antitrust at that time. And he said, no, this is not at all a reason for us at Novell to celebrate. This is actually pretty bad, because why aren't we in this position of being so dominant, so big, that people think they should have a look at us, and we had to deal with antitrust. So it seems, although this is of course a risky play again now in thinking for Google, but he seems to like this position of we are so big, we are so dominant, that we are faced with those antitrust and potential implications. So that means what Google represents for business and for internet today. And
you know, he's said many times before that, you know, if as we grow, we should certainly expect this. We should expect scrutiny, because when you're that big, you are going to be scrutinized. And I mean, if you look at the history of business in the United States and the anti-monopoly movements that happened, nearly 100 years ago at this point, there is this, businesses grow and they drive innovation, they drive industry, and they drive impressive things because they have the money to do so, and then all of a sudden people get really nervous about that, and then the government steps in and our free market economy goes out the window, and we're left with trust busting. And you know, we still feel some of the negative effects of that on a daily basis, even with, you know, AT&T and some of our various phone companies, for example. But there's a long history of that happening. As things get really large and really dominant, instead of letting a market shake out, we step in. You know, it would be interesting. It's a thought experiment in this country, but it would be interesting to actually see what could shake out of this if Google were allowed to do its thing, or Microsoft had been allowed to do its thing, and ultimately, you know, players are going to emerge. As we've seen, you know, Microsoft, despite, you know, the antitrust and all the whatever, other players came in anyway. Google emerged as dominant in a field that Microsoft had very little experience in or feel for. Facebook exploded. All of a sudden, you know, the Office suite itself and enterprise software just kind of became passe. And
no, I agree, and that's always And that's he also said in one of the hearings that I think in the sense of it's both the beauty and the threat on the internet, that the next big thing or company is just one click away, and it's somewhat true. I mean, they are very, very dominant, which doesn't mean that. I mean, of course, it's a matter of defense. But in the end, who can imagine in 5 years? And I mean, Facebook is just 7 or so, so they are all pretty young. And right. Who knows what in 3 or 5 years, if there's not another big player in an existing vertical or a new one we don't even think of today.
So, right, so. And looking internationally as well. I mean, this isn't just about the United States or you know, developed markets. I mean, you know, Google can't break into China. They can't do it, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of reasons for that. But you know, it's probably not going to happen. Which means, you know, mm-hmm. what are the long term implications of that? And even, you know, it's interesting you bring up vertical markets. If we look at this from a vertical perspective, this is actually a very interesting horizontal play now that Microsoft appears to be making. If you can't dominate a vertical, well, let's spread mm-hmm. out and you know, and use that as a way to leverage and find new ways to hopefully, and I plan to agree with Eric Schmidt, hopefully become, you know, this really dominant player again. There's a reason people aren't looking that hard at Microsoft anymore. No one cares.
And as you mentioned, the emerging market, and coming back to our core education, it is, of course, what we see, and everybody who called me crazy about Pearson having their own tablet. Well, with the recent announcement of this partnership of Micromax, so an Indian tablet maker, with Pearson to roll out the so-called Funbook. Okay. I agree, Pearson is not literally making its own tablet hardware-wise, but they are definitely now on board, and a very friendly price under $150, I think, even for the Indian market. I mean, we see that apparently publishers are thinking of how can we partner with a hardware company to get our ecosystem into or on a device, which is then distributed to potentially how many hundreds of millions of users.
Exactly, and you know, this is it's all about ecosystem. We've been saying this now for what, 2-3 years, that it ultimately will be all about having this ecosystem, this turnkey sort of solution. When people think about education, increasingly people think Pearson, actually, mm-hmm. and for better or for worse, no matter how you feel about the company, it's, you know, they are fully aware that they need to have a means for distributing. They need to have mm-hmm. the content to distribute, and they need to have their markets nailed down. And the same, very much, I believe, goes for Microsoft. They need to have their market solid. They need to have mm-hmm. content. They need to have the right distribution methods. And whether that's hardware or software or otherwise, they are building it out. How this plays out in education, gosh, mm-hmm. maybe we'll have cheap e-textbooks running on those Windows 8 tablets. And won't that be great?
Absolutely. So I think that was a good statement to call this a wrap, and for this review at special, at least. And I guess we are going to read an article in that direction or about that topic directly shortly on ZDNet. And I'm certainly also having a lot of thoughts going on in my own head, so we'll see of when I have the time to put a piece out there. Otherwise, a plug for stuff you're up. I have seen the latest episode of C12 News for the K-12 space is out, and people can watch it. And what else are you up to?
So today we're formally launching, Angela Myers, Richard Byrne, and I are formally launching our new course, So You Want to Be a Leader. We run that over on WizIQ, and that soyouwantabealeader.com is up and live, and it's start on in May, May 10th, we start actually offering with our first course. So that's kind of a new venture. We'll see. The whole goal is to have, and I think we'll have them on C12 just for a kind of a launch. But really the goal is to help teachers kind of step beyond the classroom and become leaders in their own school, in the community at large, and maybe even, you know, make a little extra money as they are sort of forging ahead in educational leadership. So very curious to see how that all plays out, but it should be an interesting course to take.
So interesting. So live classes from May 6th then every week?
Yep. So every Thursday, beginning May 10th, the last four Thursdays of May. So it's a four-module course, $197 bucks, and it gets you three brilliant minds telling you all about educational leadership.
Oh, absolutely. So we'll put the link in the description, and then everybody can go over to WizIQ and check
course
the course out. And
yeah.
Okay,
yep.
Great.
Yeah.
Good.
Cool.
So then I wish you a lovely rest of the day and week, and looking forward to the next episode of Review Ed. And
Absolutely.
ENT, of course.
Of course.
Okay.
Well, take care. Have a great evening.
Take care. Bye.